This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The issue of bullying is again in the spotlight in New Hampshire, with a showing tonight at UNH Durham of a powerful and controversial documentary called Bully the Movie. The film is part of a growing conversation about bullying that took off a few years ago after national attention focused on the suicides of kids who were tormented at school. The movie presents the painful stories of children who were severely bullied and also their parents' struggles to get help from the schools. It shows that even in this age of zero tolerance policies and pep rallies about positive school culture, many of these parents were deeply disappointed by the responses they received, which led them to broader activism. And these issues certainly resonate in New Hampshire, where many educators and parents feel bullying has become far more complicated, with social media and the internet expanding the bully's power beyond the playground. In fact, just a few years ago, the state passed a comprehensive anti-bullying law, said to be one of the toughest in the country. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at bullying, new approaches, new thinking, and whether it's possible to go overboard on this topic. Let's hear from you, too. What experience have you had with bullying, either when you were a kid yourself or now with your own children? How well did the adults in this situation respond? And have you seen instances where people have gone too far on the anti-bullying bandwagon? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us in studio. Malcolm Smith, professor of youth and family education and policy at UNH. He developed the Courage to Care anti-bullying program and worked on the state's anti-bullying law, which passed in 2010. Malcolm, it's great to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura. It's going to be fun.
Also with us, Carol Croteau, co-founder of Bully Free New Hampshire, a grassroots organization committed to bully awareness, prevention, and intervention in New Hampshire schools. The mother of a child who was bullied in high school, Carol also worked on that anti-bullying law. And Carol, good to see you too. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Jeff Fregon, an educator with the Youth and Student Program at the Brown Center, a teaching, training, and research center at UNH. Jeff also works on that Courage to Care program that I mentioned. And Jeff, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Well, and Malcolm, you've been working on this issue for a long, long time. Have you felt any shift, Malcolm, in the culture around this in recent years? Or are we pretty much in the same place we were 10 years ago?
No, I think two really great things have happened. One is that the conversation has deepened. It's become more of a concern for our kids in general, and particularly about our kids in this democracy learning civility. And I think the second thing that's new is the science has deepened, and we've really beginning to understand bullying as a crisis in the social and emotional development of our kids. That really it's a deficit that children have that's similar to a math deficit or a English deficit. But I think that our focus in schools has been so much on testing and getting good scores and building the knowledge base of our kids that in education we've gotten away from teaching basic civility.
Yeah. So we take it a lot more seriously these days. We don't just say, well, kids will be kids and it happened when I was in school and...
I think the law and the great organizations that sprung up, advocacy organization like Carol's organization, have done so much to deepen the discussion. And now parents and students and teachers are deeply worried, and we want to bring the rest of the community into that discussion.
So do you think we're in a better place than we were, Malcolm, 10 years ago?
I think we understand where we're at better. I'm not sure that, you know, the bullying research has a history of failure. And I think we're finally on to some things. And one of the things is the Courage to Care program that we've been working on. But we based it on the latest science, which is very different than approaches in the past. You know, in the past, at first, people thought that, the earliest studies were done on this in the 70s and 80s. And during that time, you know, in education, we go through these phases where we have the giant answer to every child's question. And when Dr. Oveus was doing the initial studies, both in overseas and in the United States, and we really began to develop the science of bullying, it was the age of self-esteem. And so Dr. Ovais and some of his colleagues in the early research made the mistake to think that bullying was a self-esteem, you know, problem, that kids with low self-esteem would bully so they could become better. Well, you know, it really turned out to be totally false. In fact, bullies are closer to narcissists or kids who think their stuff doesn't stink than they are to any sort of low self-esteem type of creature. Then we thought, secondly, in the 90s, our thinking led us to think, well, the answer is teaching kids mediation and conflict resolution. And so you might remember we had kids on the playground with clipboards saying, I'm your mediator if you have a problem. And that, I mean, this is not a public radio word, but that sucked. It just didn't work, you know. And so now we've come to the realization that it's really a social emotional learning deficit. The kids really in our society haven't been learning how to treat each other civilly, and that that lack of education is really showing. And so we've been working, and many people have been working, to bring civility back into the schools.
Well, and Carol Croteau, you got involved in this in the mid-2000s after your own daughter was badly bullied in high school, and you took the lead. You were sort of the voice of New Hampshire's anti-bullying bill that passed in 2010. How would you now describe, Carol, the culture around this issue versus a couple years back when you first started getting involved?
Well, I think parents feel more empowered by the new law, so they're coming forward. They're advocating for their children. I think Malcolm's really right on with the self-esteem issue. Kids who are perpetrators of bullying behavior do have good self-esteem. They, in fact, feel entitled to...
They're the alpha kids,
yeah,
so
they
speak.
Feel entitled to bully. But as far... I think we're in a better place than what we were, especially with the new law, because parents are coming forward. They are advocating for their students, and they are really pushing back on the schools who are saying, well, I'm sorry, we can't do anything, or it's your child's fault, where they blame the victim. So I think the parents really are a key component in this whole equation today.
What are you hearing from parents? I mean, you've sort of become an advocate. Again, you're the co-founder of this group, Bully Free New Hampshire. What are you hearing from parents?
Well, the biggest issue I hear from parents is the lack of training of those who are charged with implementing the new law, which are the school administrators. Seems like they're great sending their staff and teachers for the training, yet they're not getting it themselves. So I hear a lot of this piece missing, that they don't understand the nature of bullying, which is what Malcolm's been talking about with the self-esteem issues, and really focusing on the behavior of the bully or the perpetrator rather than the targets. And not that they do need care, don't get me wrong, because post-traumatic stress disorder is a big issue with children who are targets of bullying behavior. So that's where I see the big problems now.
Yeah, well, and we'll get into the law a little bit later and what it means and what it entails. But Jeff Fregon, I want to get to you too. Now, you're working on the ground at the classroom level with teachers and kids. What are you seeing these days?
Well, I think... Now 2 years out, 3 years out from the law, I think initially there was a groundswell of folks coming, looking for something to fill the gap on in their curriculum, because they were then mandated to do this. We all knew it was a good idea, we being educators in general. And so folks were sort of grasping, trying to find programs to fill the gap. And to speak to Carol's point, exactly, there folks didn't really know what to do. Didn't know what it needed to look like to solve this problem. And I think what I'm seeing now, working for an institution that our clients, our teachers and schools and their students and the communities, is that now it spun 180 degrees one way, and now folks are starting to find their feet, and they're trying to find, okay, this worked for us, this didn't work for us. They went from having, you know, the incidences of bullying in schools went skyrocketed after the law was passed because of incidences of bullying, because folks were then super sensitive, hypersensitive, and would report a lot more. And that sort of led to, okay, well, let's flesh this out. Let's have discussions around what exactly is bullying. We got two best friends in the hallway giving each other noogies, and they'd get reported because it looks like behavior, but they don't know the backstory. And so then now it's sort of mitigating out, and not mitigating out, but leveling out, and folks are starting to get their feet under them and figuring, okay, we need to go through this process, figure it out. Okay, that wasn't bullying. It was still inappropriate behavior, but that wasn't bullying, and that instance of the two best friends can sort of go away. And so now I think teachers and schools are coming to programs like the Brown Center and other places with folks that can address the issues and help them address the issues, coming and asking those questions that they've come up with of like, okay, there's this gap. We've got the teachers that are getting, there's funding to send teachers, but it doesn't seem to be enough. Let's backfill.
Well, and I do want to ask all of you about this issue that you raised, Jeff, about people getting hypersensitive. You know, is that really bullying and so forth? But if I could ask you a personal question, you mentioned to me before we went on the air that you yourself were bullied as a child. How does that inform the work that you're doing today?
Oh, it informs it a lot. If any of the gentlemen who bullied me when I was growing up, I just want to say thanks. Most of them over the years have apologized to me. I wasn't bullied on the level that we see in movies and stuff like that, but it was enough to really create a pretty good hard nugget in terms of, like, for me, of cause and purpose. It was not. You couldn't pay me enough money to go back to middle school, or high school was okay because I had a lot of friends who had my back, but we were even more severely bullied in high school. And, you know, I look at what, you know, it was sort of, I went to Pinkerton Academy, and when they saw it, they dealt with it, and in a pretty good way. But it was still, it happened a lot, and for me, that's really given me a good drive and a purpose, because I see kids who are victims, and my heart just goes out to them. And then I see the bullies, and knowing a little bit of what we know from the research of what drives them, my heart goes out to them as well, because there's gaps there.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break, and we'll take your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. Cloudy, some scattered showers across New Hampshire for today, with high temperatures from 55 to 62 degrees. More on battling bullying coming up on The Exchange on NHPR. Then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, we take a look at President Obama's 2014 budget plan. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Sony Classics, The Company You Keep, a thriller directed by and starring Robert Redford with Shia LaBeouf and Susan Sarandon about a man outrunning the FBI in his radical past. It starts Friday. From Restaurant Week Portsmouth and the Seacoast, a 10-day culinary experience featuring 49 restaurants, now to the 13th. Details at restaurantweekportsmouth.com. And Bedford Falls Assisted Living and Memory Care offering a monthly Alzheimer's Caregivers Book Club. A copy of the novel Still Alice may be reserved by calling Bedford Falls at 471-2555. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the latest thinking on combating bullying in the Granite State. We're looking at new programs, new approaches, and a relatively new law that passed 3 years ago. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. What experience have you had with bullying, either when you were a kid yourself or with your own kids now? How well do you think the adults in these situations responded? And one of our guests mentioned that early on in the bullying law, some got hypersensitive about bullying. Do you see instances where people perhaps have gone a little overboard on this issue? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Malcolm, let's pick up on what Jeff said just before the break, that in the early days of this law that passed in 2010, teachers were labeling everything as bullying. And we went a little bit overboard on this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, like any new law, it's only a guideline. There was a learning curve. It was a hard learning curve. We asked the schools to take responsibility not just for bullying that occurs in their building, but to any bullying that occurred that would affect or interrupt a child's right to an education. But I think the teachers...
So cyberbullying.
Yes, yes. Or at the bus stop or at the skating rink, you know. But I think once we went around, and I have to say at a cooperative extension, we worked with over 100,000 people in 2 years trying to help them understand the law, to educate it.
Wow, 100,000 people, that's
a
lot.
Yeah, parents and teachers, and it was a labor of love, though, because I love this law. And as we did, we found out that when we gave them the twofold definition in the law, which is real clear and simple to me. That is that it has to rise to the level of interfering with the child's right to an education. But the second beautiful thing that we put in the law is this definition that says bullying is the result of an imbalance of power. And when teachers really think about that, when students really think about that, they get it. You know, that imbalance of power. And it's working very well, but now that we understand it, we've got to change the kid culture, and that's really where we're at. So the learning curve, I'd say, is there. Except I would agree with Carol that a lot of our efforts and a lot of the efforts to understand the law were done on teachers' and counselors' behalf, but administrators still have some way to go.
Now, change the kid culture. That's a tall order.
Well, let me tell you about that. I mean, what we see are some fundamental changes in our young people. And I have to say, at the academies, at the university, and this is something we're trying to work really hard on at UNH. We've come to understand that we don't do a good job of preparing our teachers. We've been so focused in the academic world on raising those test scores and helping to develop. And it's funny because there was a guy who wrote a very powerful book that many of us had to read in college or as parents, that David Elkin, and you might remember this, it was called The Hurried Child. And Dr. Elkin, clear back in 1980, you know, was saying, if we're not careful and we put all this emphasis on testing and sports, remember we've gone through this phase where you had to drop your 3-month-old into water to learn how to swim, and we had developed the La Fufu Petite Academe instead of, you know, all of this. We got in such a hurry to raise our kids. Dr. Elkin was afraid, and I think he was right, that it would be at the expense of their social-emotional learning.
Well, I want to ask you folks, too, about the kid culture and also the parent culture, because I've got a couple emails on that already. But to you, I think, Carol Croteau, you know, there is all this adult attention and the programs that you all work on. How do you, though, Carol, trickle that down to the kids? Because children can be incredibly mean, even though, yes, they know there's a zero tolerance policy on the books.
Well, if I could just interject something about what Jeff was saying earlier about the hypersensitivity, and Malcolm can probably back this up. Research shows that whenever new programs on anti-bullying are introduced into a school, reports do go up, and then they level off. So this is not anything new. It's not new to New Hampshire, even when the new law was implemented. And I'm so glad that the imbalance of power was put in the law, because when I was advocating for that, they did not want to put it in the law, the drafting team, until Malcolm Smith came along. And that's so, so important to understand, especially for administrators, to understand that it's an imbalance of power and it's a form of violence. Getting back to your question, I don't really deal with the kids, so I'm not sure I'm the right one to ask that question about trickling down to the kids. Although I will say that what's so important in every school is that they have a positive climate and culture program in place. I was speaking with a parent yesterday who told me that her school principal was not going to do that. And she said, well, I guess that's her right. And I said, no, it's not her right. That school is your school. As a taxpayer, the schools belong to the communities and not to the principal. So I kind of put it back on parents and say, as taxpayers, you do have a right to have positive school climates in your schools.
Well, and that's an emphasis that we're seeing more these days, right, Carol? Less on don't bully and more on creating a positive school environment?
Well, yes, I think that's the answer, and I hope that Malcolm and Jeff would agree that that's truly the answer to many of these issues.
Let's take some calls, and then a lot more to talk about. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We want your questions and comments and concerns about bullying, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. In Nashua, Carol's on the line. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead, Carol.
I was bullied as a kid for about a period of 5 years between elementary school, right up until I was pulled out and put into an all-girls school because of severe depression. And to this day, I still have, you know, some PTSD symptoms. Not a form of violence, can actually be violent. And this was, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, where electronics basically consisted of a telephone, and you get, you know, phone calls throughout the night. So it is extremely damaging, but I also think after all this time looking back that it's a really natural thing for kids, the alpha kids, to want to cull through the herd and pick out the weaker kids. The problem is, and the kids are always really open to these new programs. I have children of my own. They always jump on board. Yes, we're going to be nice to the other kids. It absolutely comes down to the parents. And we're not around as much as we used to be, and we don't look out for everybody else's kids, and we don't enforce that societal behavior standard that should be across the board. It's like all the parents need to agree that no one can act this way, and that it must be taught at home, and that it must be taught on the field. And it doesn't have to always be just at school, even though that's where most of the kids are most of the time.
Yeah, Carol, you know, this is a great point, and I've got a couple emails to that point, too. Jeff, go ahead, parents.
So one of the things in the research that Malcolm and I delved into with the Courage to Care, this one study done by some folks looked at over 400 programs, anti-bullying programs all over the world. And the way that they figured out which studies to use, I won't get into because it's really complicated. But they distilled out a number of traits that the best, or by best being most successful, anti-bullying programs had. And every high point that we've talked about and that your caller, Carol, just talked about was on that list. Full breadth and depth implementation within the school, from superintendent down to any staff in the school. Parents having knowledge of what happens. Community members having knowledge of what bullying is, how it works. And then the students as well. So everyone has to be on board. And that's a huge, huge, just Sisyphean undertaking for schools to really think about and look at implementing. But if it's going to work, it needs to be a full depth kind of thing. And it does need to go on to the parents.
Well, Carol, thanks a lot for raising that. I've got three emails here all talking about the parents. Here's one from Allison in Dover. I have a daughter in the fourth grade who has learning and behavioral disabilities. I've already seen how she is vulnerable to bullying. I often hear about the need to train teachers and administrators about bullying prevention, but I do not hear much about the role in parents helping their children to prevent bullying and intervene when bullying is occurring. It seems to me, Allison says, that as parents, we are placing all of the burden on our schools to take care of this issue. And I want to acknowledge Margie in Nottingham. She says also parents are very important. Parents need to be taught about bullying. Parents bully in the workplace, bully each other, bully their children. Here's another email from someone who didn't give a name. He says, so now there is another disability and we are tagging it onto our kids. It starts at home. Family life, parenting needs to improve to prevent it. So thanks for all those emails, as well as your call, Carol. And Malcolm, there's a theme here.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, first of all, the school has always been involved in this role. I grew up in Kansas. I attended a one-room school. And you know, our teacher met us at the door with a hug and asked us how we were doing, how we were feeling. Did anything happen on the bus? You know, all of those questions. And we've gotten away from that in school. But to the parents' point, here's just what the research shows. We are having an empathy crisis that many of our kids, particularly kids of privilege, are not being raised in environments where empathy, caring, courage, understanding are values that the kids are learning. And our testing showed that. I mean, when we started the Courage to Care project, which has shown that you can successfully teach empathy in 9 weeks, 1 hour a week, we could raise kids' empathy scores in New Hampshire. But the scary thing was, when we did our initial testing and we looked at the initial empathy scores of young people in New Hampshire, a very privileged in many ways state. You know, we're very lucky to live in New Hampshire. But our kids, our seventh graders, scored lower on a very well-known and very established scale called the Basic Empathy Scale, which measures your ability. You know, and empathy is just the ability to put yourself into someone else's shoes and to act on your instinct to help others.
So our seventh graders rank lower in empathy than in many other states?
No, lower than most kids in the world.
In the world?
Afghanistan, Egypt, there we were lower than England, where the scale was established. And that scared me. As a parent, as a researcher, that alerts me. But as a parent, that scares me to death. But we were able to raise that in 9 weeks. I mean, that's all it took. 1 hour a week, 9 weeks.
Well, and since we've gotten so much interest from our listeners on the parental end, let me just ask you one more question, Malcolm. You know, of course, many parents, every parent listening would say, no, bullying's not acceptable. And yet, there are many bullies out there. Kids are being bullied. So what's the disconnect?
The disconnect, one, is it takes time to teach manners. You know, and I think as parents, we were sold a fallacy, and that fallacy was quality time. You know, I mean, how many times, Laura, did your mom or dad or whoever raised you have to say to you, don't chew with your mouth open? People don't want to see that. You know, I remember my mom hundreds of times. And finally, I got it. You know, I hope now when I go out to dinner, I keep my mouth closed. But that's what it takes. We learn manners by repetition and by practice. And you know, bullying behavior, we know, is addictive in the brain. That you can be addicted to the rush you get off of stepping on someone else.
It's a power high.
It is. It's a power high. And so what we've decided, what we have to do, is take this generation of young people and addict them to doing kind things, to kindness. You know, and so from parents' standpoint, that means involving your kids in generous and empathetic behavior at home and modeling empathy. And so much of us spend our time in the car griping about other drivers, griping about people on the radio, griping about, you know, and our kids have really picked up on that. And remember, you know, it's about modeling. It's about teaching by doing.
Let's take some more calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go next to Candia, where Ken is waiting. Hi, Ken. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
It's actually Tim.
Tim, I apologize.
No problem. I just wanted to call in today. I have five boys, and they go to Pittsfield Middle, Elementary, and High School. My oldest child, Davis, who at 15 years old is 6'2", 259 pounds, has always been a big boy. So in second and third grade, when 2008 rolled around, they had put through this bullying course, and the teachers went to it, and we were having a problem with Davis at the time because he was so much larger than all the other students in his class. This theme of, like, walking up to Davis and kicking him in the shin or punching him for no random reason. Now, all these kids were his friends, all right, but he just didn't appreciate it. He's hypersensitive, you know. If somebody punches him, he gets upset about it, you know, even just playing around. But he's three times the size of the kids in his class. So he came home crying about this on many occasions, and we said, you know what, Davis, don't take that. If they hit you, push them back. You know, it's only going to take a bump. They're going to stop hitting you, all right? So a week later, we start getting reports from the school that he's bullying other children, right? So we went in for a school meeting with a principal, and he tried to accuse my child of being a bully. And I'm just like, no, I don't think you understand the whole situation, what's going on here. I think you ought to sit in the classroom for a day and see what's going on. Then we'll have another discussion about it. When the principal actually watched Davis's interaction with the other children, he came back and said that Davis was not a bully at all, and he was sorry for making the mistake. But he was defending himself against these other children, which thought it was funny to hit a kid that was so much bigger than him. Oh, well, he can't feel it. He's a monster, you know? So Davis was accused of being a bully, when in reality, he wasn't doing anything but defending himself.
Wow.
So he had to go through the problem with the school of him having a bully label put in his permanent file. I had to have the principal remove that paperwork from his file, because that's just wrong. My child might be big, but he's not a bully. And like other parents have said, you know, the teachers, they only see part of the story. They're not seeing the whole situation. They're going in kind of blind to the situation. When you've got a kid that stands 2 feet taller than the rest of the kids in his school or in his class, and you see this kid standing out on the playground and he, say, defends himself by just pushing a child away from him, the child falls, the teacher automatically assumes that it was the big kid bullying the little kid.
Well, Ken, this is quite a story. And Jeff, you were nodding. Sounds familiar to you?
Yeah, just in terms of being really sensitive, I was, labeled a mama's boy when I was in, you know, middle school, and I definitely was. And you know, any little thing, I got really upset about it, and that just puts a big target on you. And so, that's where the imbalance of power thing and the assumption, it sounds like, with Tim's son was that just because he was bigger, he had the power.
Can't make that assumption.
Power, yeah, it's not just physical power. It's social power. It's social capital. It's how that power, because, you know, you could have Napoleon in his class, and that's where the power is, not Tim standing 2 feet taller than his classmates. And it just takes some education on the part of the teachers and the parents. And parents, Tim, good job standing up and doing it in a non-inflammatory and constructive way.
Here's something else that I wonder from Ken's story. And Ken, thanks for calling and sharing that. The lesson that many parents, Jeff, have taught their kids is stand up to that bully. Hit him or her back, and he or she will leave you alone. I was going through some material yesterday, and someone related a story where, you know, they finally slugged the bully. They couldn't take it anymore, and that bully never came back. Is that still advice that we give our kids? Carol?
No, absolutely not, because as Tim found out, and I'd like to say to Tim, you know, I'm sorry that this happened to your family and to your son, but that's exactly what happens. Your child, as when my child defended herself, she was the one who got caught. So that's nothing that I would recommend. And I do tell parents who tell me that this is what they're going to tell their child. I say, no, don't do it.
Maybe I want to ask you why not, Carol. So after a short break, we'll talk about why not and some other thoughts, too, relating to Ken's call. Thank you so much for that call, Ken. We'll take more of your calls after a short break. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from FCI Federal, dedicated people working together to accomplish rewarding outcomes. That is the hallmark of FCI Federal. More information online at fcifederal.com. And from New England College in Henniker, introducing bachelor degree programs completed in just 3 years with 5 semesters per year. Information and schedules at nec.edu. 9:40, this is NHPR.
Alex Ray, owner of The Common Man and NHPR underwriter.
Way back, probably over 15 years ago, I supported NHPR because I personally liked it. Today, I support it because the public actually says to me, I like doing business with The Common Man because you support my love, which is NHPR. And that's enough for me to believe that we're getting a very good return on our contribution.
Find out how you can become an NHPR underwriter by visiting the support page at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the latest thinking approaches on bullying here in the Granite State. There's a panel discussion tonight at UNH. Also, they'll be showing Bully the Movie. That's the documentary that you may have heard about that came out about a year ago. If you want more information on that event, go to our website, nhpr.org. We're taking your questions and comments on this topic right now at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Carol Croteau, just before the break, we were talking about the old advice that many parents give their kids when they're bullied. Look, just hit him back. And you said, no, don't do that. Why not?
Well, because their child is the one that generally gets caught. And as
like
Tim,
our caller.
Yes, as Tim found out. But also, I wanted to say that that's where zero, and as Tim found out as well, zero tolerance policies don't work. And they don't work in a broad spectrum of situations, such as, you know, where suspension seems to be the only answer when it really isn't. Zero tolerance does not take in the nuances of the situations. And as bullying, as everyone who's been involved with this knows, it's so complicated. And there's always this long story that parents come, and I can be on the phone with a parent for sometimes 2 hours talking about the nuances and all the intricacies of their situation. So that's where administrators need to step back and say, I need to hear more about what's going on in this situation, and not, you know, say to Tim, you know, your son Davis is going to be suspended for 3 days because he defended himself, which is not what we should be seeing in schools.
Another piece of advice that parents have often given their kids, Jeff, is tell the teacher. We can't help you until you tell the teacher, you tell the principal. But a lot of kids are afraid that that means they'll get bullied even more. Now they're, you know, not only being picked on, but they're a snitch.
Yeah, the number, when I'm doing activities with youth, and we do activities that bring out these questions, and when you ask them, well, you know, what's it like, you know, why don't more people stand up? Why aren't people more of an upstanders? And the number one answer every time without hesitation is we're afraid. We're afraid of being bullied instead of that person or in addition to that person, or we're afraid of getting in trouble for saying something. And then there's the whole snitch culture.
So how do you change that in this program that you do?
Carefully. Really, the activities that that I use with the work that I do with the Brown Center, and that overlaps with Malcolm's work and my work with the Courage to Care, is by using activities to address issues one at a time. And we don't really talk about bullying because the kids are so tired of hearing bullying that you'll get the eye roll and the stare. Carol's, I feel like I'm in seventh grade again, where Carol and I are passing notes back and forth as we're scribbling here, like, oh, this is awesome. Tattling is telling. And it's really helping kids identify who are resources, you know, each other, their peers are the resources, their teachers are the resources. And it's really breaking that culture of you know, you're not a tattletale, you're saving someone. But it's really difficult to break into that because the culture is so strong, the culture of silence around, I'm afraid to tell.
It'll just make things worse.
And I want to get back before I forget, because I will, of what Carol said, I've got underlined over here. The principals, the parents, everyone needs to remember to take a deep breath, no matter how emotionally charged this is, take a deep breath and seek for clarity first. Find out more information before you jump in with guns blazing. And that's a really bad analogy, sorry. But principals, teachers, parents, and students, everyone needs to find out more information and then go from there.
Let's take another call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Philip's calling from Newcastle. Hi, Philip. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. I was good to hear about empathy, and my question is, do video games play a role in children's inability to empathize? You know, they play a lot of violent video games, a lot of kids, for a lot of hours, and I'm wondering if, you know, not being able to perceive the consequence of their actions, even though it's, you know, on a video game, you know, does that contribute to kids not understanding how things feel?
And decreasing empathy levels.
Right, and could that even be a tool that teachers or parents can use?
Yeah, boy, great point. Malcolm and then Jeff?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes, it decreases empathy?
Yes, it does. I mean, there's a reason the military uses, you know, video type trainings that are much like video games to desensitize soldiers on the battlefield to empathy, because they're very powerful teachers. Television is a very powerful teacher. You know, the number of murders that young people have seen on TV by the age of fifth grade has changed our culture. I mean, and it's not just that sort of thing. It's that there's no one in the environment to interpret that information. You know, kids live, bullying thrives in places where parents and teachers and community people don't go. And one of those spaces is on the internet and in player games. We recently had a, but you know, it's not just in American culture. We just recently had a film team from South Korea come and film our work with The Courage to Care, because in South Korea they've had a huge number of suicides related to online gaming and ostracism that kids feel in these online games. It spills over to school and spills over to the culture. But you know, this trend, this anti-empathy trend in our culture, which you know almost glorifies people who are not sensitive to others.
Tough.
Yeah, has been going on for some time. And as a result of it, just like other things that we've emphasized, it's changing our kids. And I think it's time for parents and teachers and certainly people who work in the academic world like me to take this back.
Here's an email from Dan in Concord who says, I worry that many schools are focusing on the impact of bullying without addressing the cause. It's easy to quickly label kids who bully as bad kids or narcissists, as Professor Smith has said. Many kids who bully are struggling with mental health challenges, environmental factors outside of school like domestic violence, substance abuse, sexual abuse. Many schools have implemented effective school-wide systems for mental health screening and interventions to reach the tough-to-reach kids. So we've been focusing a lot on the bullied. Here's Dan mentioning the bully, and I can see all of you want to jump in. Malcolm? Go ahead.
I just have to say something real quick. This is, you know, part of the common myth that's out there. First of all, I want to say very clearly that kids with mental illness are not the people who bully, by and large. The research is very clear about that. They are the victims. But here's the interesting thing, that repeated bullying is a rare creature in that repeated indulgence in it. In other words, if you bully kids over and over, you can develop what we call a conduct disorder. Your brain comes to be conditioned to pick on other people, and that's a very serious disorder. So, but you know, there's this myth that these are the kids that are troubled, and it's really usually they're the victims.
We talked earlier, yeah, bullies tend to be alpha kids.
Yeah, except that there are kids who are retaliators, and they're kids who've been bullied over and over who one day, you know, finally try to do something about it. And we've seen that, you know, in all of the crisis work that I do on the National Crisis Team. You know, when we go into places like Newtown, we know right away, those of us on the National Response Team know that these kids are going to have been ostracized in their schools and in their community.
Well, another reason to take bullying super seriously. I want to hear from you, too. How about Carol Croteau and Jeff Frege on some of the themes that Dan brings out in his email?
Go ahead, Carol.
One thing that I wanted to mention is that there is research out there. The Justice Department has research that kids who are bullies, the perpetrators, do end up having more criminal records than children who are not. And those are 30% of the kids who are identified as bullies from sixth grade to ninth grade will have some sort of interaction with the police by
so
the time they're 18.
So there is something going on there.
Yeah, so it is important that we adults, and I mean the adults in school and we adults in the community, take this seriously, because these children do need help in that regard too. Not all of them will end up facing, you know, criminal charges, but it's an issue that we do need to help the bully.
What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, for sure. I was it Dan, the
yes,
gentleman who wrote the email? So I would say that what Malcolm said, based on the research, is true. But just to really look at one thing he said about the youth being in crisis, sort of those are the outliers. Usually bullies, we talked about, are folks who are trying to work with maintenance of self-esteem, not building self-esteem. But what Dan mentioned were the what we would refer to as the at-risk youth, kids with troubles at home. Those are the kids that fall into what Malcolm was talking about. They're in crisis at school or at home, and school is their sort of bastion of normalcy where they would then sort of do the bullying. And those fall into the same category as the kids who were bullied. They're just being bullied at home.
It's just a slightly different skewed piece. Let's take another call if we could. And Mary is joining us from Amherst. Thanks for waiting, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. I am a mom of three boys, and they're all middle school age boys. And I will say, we have raised our kids with always saying to them, you know, if you're around and you see something going on with one of your friends, stand up for them. Stand up for them. It's important to do that. If they're your friends and they mean a lot to you, then you stand up for them. And I also say to them, if something's happening to you, stand up for yourself. And if that means that you have to, if you have to get physical, then you have to get physical. The rule in our house is you never start it. But my husband, being a little old-fashioned, would say, you finish it. And the fact of the matter is that if you're around and there's other kids and there's other people and they see you sticking up for somebody, the next thing you know, you're going to have three or four or five kids all standing up for that person.
Wow. Mary, thanks a lot for calling in, and good luck with those three boys in middle school. That's a lot. Two things from her call, Jeff Fregon. The role of the bystander, first of all. I know you folks focus on this with your Courage to Care program.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Like I said earlier in the show, when asked why they don't stand up more, youth across the board say fear. Why don't we do this? We're afraid of retribution. We're afraid of getting in trouble.
Why are you sticking up for that nerd?
Yeah, why are you sticking up for them? And okay, you want some of this too? That's what they're afraid of. And it goes back to Malcolm's point and Carol's point, is that building a community where within a school system, which is built on the community from homes and from coaches and from everyone else, where folks, it is okay for youth to stick up for one another and say, no, that's not all right here. That's not how we roll. That's not what we do here. We're not going to stand up for that. It takes a lot of work, and it takes practice, which is where Courage to Care and other programs come in, not necessarily doing role-playing because that can actually cause damage, but doing activities and having conversations where kids can share their experiences and have a chance to practice in situations where it's not real time, but they can then say, oh, this is what we were talking about. This is what was like that time in class when we did that activity and we got to practice that. And really identifying it, not being afraid to really name names. I mean, the Sun Tzu, know your enemy. So naming the name, it's like, this is what we need to do. These are my resources of people that I can go to. This is what this looks like. Oh, that is bullying. I'm going to go do something about that. Even if it's not right in front of me because I'm afraid, I'm going to go and tell someone or whatever I am comfortable with.
So Mary talked about bystander syndrome, teaching her sons to jump in, don't be passive bystanders. She also talked about, though, what we talked about before, Malcolm, which is, you know, don't start it, but finish it.
Well, the research is clear about this, too, and I don't want to sound like somebody from the ivory tower because I deal with this in my kids and my own life. You know, we have bullying at work, and here's what we need to teach. And this is really, you know, and I would say to Mary and her husband and every parent out there, teach your kids the difference between being assertive and being aggressive. And that's what's really gotten mixed up in the kid culture right now. You know, it's okay to say, don't do that to my friend. In fact, I'd love to hug you if you did that. But it's not okay to say, if you do that again, I'll do this to you. Because we're trying to stop this violence from spreading. And as I've seen all too often, bullying begets horrible violence. It will end. And we've seen that in 54 school shootings around the country, that it ends ugly if we don't stop it in its earliest stage, if we don't teach assertiveness instead of aggressiveness.
And here's an email to that effect, what you just said, Malcolm. This is from Mike. He says, great show, Laura. Extremely important topic. What I have not heard emphasized enough is the dynamic of bullying and how it undoubtedly corresponds with the total lack of civility we see around us every day in every forum. Take a look at emails and Facebook threats and see how quickly they degenerate into name-calling. Mike says, we adults are the role models. That is how we should be teaching from the births of our children, not with 9-week courses that you mentioned earlier, Malcolm. He says, I see the makings of it even within the school system, teachers, even administrators who don't seem to get it, and they are in positions of power. That's a powerful email, Mike. Thank you very much. And what do you think, Carol Croteau?
Well, I think that's the writer makes an excellent point. And when I speak to parents and talk about schools. I talk about the adults in the school, and they're just as important in all of this as the people in the community. So I use the word adult when I talk to parents because we all have that responsibility. And just getting back to the bystander thing, I think that the writer of this email makes this point too, is that we do all need to be involved. 80% of bullying or 90% of bullying is observed by others. And
how much, Carol? Say it again.
90%
is observed by others.
And 80% do nothing about it.
So, still?
Yes.
Even with all the attention and all the programs?
That's correct. So, and what happens, and I think Jeff mentioned, it's because there's FAIR, but also in the new law, there is provisions in the new law about retaliation and that kids can fall back on that. And I guess we're...
Go ahead, Carol. You can finish your thought.
Sorry.
Well, I'll finish it up
saying
that there's a panel discussion on this topic tonight at UNH, and at 6:30, they'll begin by showing Bully, the movie. Again, that's that documentary that we started out the program talking about. If you want more information about that event, go to our website, nhpr.org, to find out more. Again, nhpr.org. And I want to thank all of you very much for coming in. Carol, it was good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Carol Croteau is co-founder of Bully Free New Hampshire. Jeff Fregon, an educator at the Youth and Student Program at the Brown Center at UNH. And Malcolm Smith, good to see you too. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Laura.
Malcolm Smith, professor of Youth and Family Education Policy at UNH and developer of the Courage to Care anti-bullying program. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.